You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it's a problem facing many rural manufacturers, too few workers to fill skilled and unskilled positions. We'll find out what these companies are doing to try to bring more workers in.
First, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced this month that it would add a new category to its awards ceremony in 2019. While the Academy was light on the details, the new category will honor, quote, outstanding achievement in popular film.
The move got a lot of backlash from fans, critics, and people in the industry saying, among other things, it was a cheap move to pander to the public and try to keep the awards show relevant.
Our next guest is here to talk about the controversy and what it says about the Oscars. Reggie Ponder, known as Reggie the Real Critic, appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for several other media outlets. Reggie, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Judith. Good to be back on.
Great to have you, Reggie. So why did the Academy feel like a popular film category was needed?
Well, we already know why that is that the Academy has been looking at their ratings. The Oscar ratings have been going down. And in fact, the ratings are down 19% versus last year. And that's a big dip. But the trend has been down, in fact. So it really is all about the money. Trying to make sure that the viewership doesn't just go away completely.
And is this a question of, okay, these superhero movies and science fiction movies and blockbusters, they're the ones paying all the rent in Hollywood, and then award time and they get, what, best costume or something like that?
That's really funny, Rob, is that you're right that the superhero movies, in fact, have never been nominated for Best Picture. But I want to step back just for a second. Is that in 1929, when the Academy had their first show, there were 12 categories, and there actually were two Best Picture categories. One of those Best Picture categories was the most outstanding production, which today would be akin to that popular film, and then the other one was the most artistic or unique production. So there were two Academy Awards for Best Picture in 1929. Now, that was short-lived because in 1930, they actually just combined them into two. But this is just not, I'm just saying it's not something that hadn't been done before.
So why is it happening now? Do we know where this idea came from and how it got enough traction that they're going to be adding it?
I think a couple of things. The first thing is that when you look at all the movies that are out there, before 2003, most of the movies came from the top 20 grossing films of that year for the Academy Awards. Since 2004, only three of those films have come from the top 20 grossing films. So there has been a trend since 2004 of these artistic, boutique, smaller independent films winning the Academy Awards. And so the Academy actually has a history of recognizing popular films, but it switched since 2004 dramatically. So that's one reason. The other reason is, and a lot of people really feel this, is that if Black Panther doesn't get a nomination for something, there's really going to be some uproar with this whole thing about Oscars so white. So that's going to be, there's just going to be a big problem as it relates to that.
Right, and Black Panther is one of the movies that's at the heart of this discussion. Huge commercial success, also a good movie. And some people have said, okay, this could be a case where this best popular movie one is kind of a consolation prize, and maybe it would make it less likely for a movie like Black Panther to end up in the prestigious best movie category.
Right. So, wow. Rob, did you read my notes? Oh, man, you always do that.
I may have stolen your ideas. I credit you.
There you go. I think three things about this. The first one is that I think that it actually does a disservice to the films like Black Panther and the other films that once they get their own, what you might call their own category, and they won't get the opportunity to be best film. So when we look at the best animated film, Coco was one of my best films of the year last year. I advocated that film should have been nominated for Best Picture. But because they have their own category, which is the best animated feature, they are very rarely nominated for the Best Picture award. And I think that that would happen. So I agree with you. So that's one thing that I have a problem with. The second thing I have a problem is I think it actually cheapens the other awards. Is that, okay, I win for this Best Picture, and now there's another group that won just because it was popular. What's the criteria? What did you – because they didn't set the criteria for how these movies will be judged, and I think that that's a problem as well.
And you said you had three different things. One is, I think, that, you know, they've tried this before. Like you said, with the animated, they created another category and kind of channeled them all there. That happened with Best Foreign Film, too, right?
Absolutely. So it becomes very hard. Now occasionally you'll get a film to kind of break through there, but really the Best Foreign Film is they get their own category and they stay in their own category. So I want to say that this is not the Blockbuster Awards. This is not the Billboard Awards where you just win something because people voted with their dollars. This is really supposed to be the Best Movie Making Award. And I think that the problem with Hollywood is that they need to expand their palette. I don't know if you guys remember that last year there were reports that some of the Academy voters wouldn't even watch Moonlight and some of the other films. They just wouldn't watch them. So if they don't watch them, then you know that they're not going to vote for them. So that whole thing of what is a good film and what isn't needs to be expanded, I think. And I think that we have some old fogies who are trying to keep the Academy one way, and I have a problem with that.
Talking to Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie, the Real Critic, about the Oscars. They're adding, the details are unclear, but they're adding a Best Popular Film category, basically, for next year. You can join in with your thoughts on that, 800-642-1234. But Reggie, from the perspective of, hey, we want people to watch our awards ceremony, and if it's 10 movies that nobody's watched, why are they going to tune in? If it's a category where you're going to see some of the movies you've seen get awards, get previewed, things like that, yeah, you might get more people to tune in. This could theoretically work to get people to watch the show, right?
Oh, absolutely. It should get more people to watch the show because let's look at the top 10 films of this year so far. So you have Black Panther, Infinity War, Incredibles 2, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, Deadpool, Solo, A Star Wars Story, Ant-Man and the Wasp, A Quiet Place, and Hotel Transylvania 3. Now, there are at least five of those that I enjoyed to some extent, but they would not, in my opinion, ever get an Oscar nomination. But then there's another four that I think I could hear somebody making an argument for. I could hear people making an argument for Black Panther. I could see people making an argument for Incredibles 2. I could see people making an argument for Deadpool 2 and A Quiet Place. I think that they all did something special, and I'm not saying they should win, but I could see the argument being made. But Solo, Star Wars Story, I don't think so.
So I guess one of the questions is, what would it mean for a film to win this most popular film award? They're already popular by definition of making it into that category. Is that win going to really do much for the film itself? Because winning Best Picture, I think, really gives a film and a director a boost. But what about this?
Well, you know, the Oscars are the Oscars. I mean, while I said I do think that it would cheapen it a bit, I don't think that the people who – I'm positive from watching the Oscars that the people who win Best Animated Film, they don't walk away saying, man, I got a consolation prize. They walk away like, man, I won an Oscar. And they're very, very happy about that. So as long as the Academy has some criteria that makes some sense, it'll work, and I think that the people will be happy to get that award. I do think that people will still try to shoot for that best film, the Best Film Award, because that's the top award. That's the one that they show at the end. So that would be my thought on that. I also want to say, Judith, is that, you know, the Academy expanded the number of films some years ago for the Best Picture to 10, and we all know that that was about viewership, because now you have 9 films that aren't going to win as opposed to 4 films that aren't going to win. But it was really to get more viewership and hopefully get people to say, well, maybe my film might win. So it really is a viewership and a money issue, I think, by far.
Talking to Reggie Ponder. He's also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He's with us to talk about the new popular film category at the Oscars just announced for next year and why it's stirring up some controversy.
And we're taking your calls right now at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this new category? Do you think it's a good move from the Academy, or is it a way to block mainstream films from getting nominated in more serious categories? Do you think anything needs to be changed with the Academy Awards? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about the new popular movie category at the Oscars with Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the new category? What's your favorite movie that might have benefited from this new award? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We heard from Ian on Facebook. Ian says the issues with the Oscars don't stem from popular movies. If they want to put Black Panther, WALL-E, or Get Out in a box, then they don't want to address their issues with race, genre, and animation. Plenty of popular movies have been selected for Best Picture, but they generally have the same audience. What do you think of what Ian had to say, Reggie?
Yeah, I do think that they put them in a box. I'm not really sure about the same audience comment. I'm not sure about that because those films all were different that he mentioned, and they speak to different different groups of people. So, but I do think, again, as we talked about with animated films, once you put those animated films in their own category, it's like, well, why do we need to give them a different award other than the animated award? So I agree with that.
And Reggie, the internet as a whole and some critics have been somewhat, you know, having a field day with this new category, kind of poking fun at Hollywood really at the Academy. What has been the reaction from people in the movie industry?
Yeah, actually, it's really interesting because, as you just said, the critics are, for the most part, don't like it. I want to speak to that for a minute about the critics. I think that a lot of us critics are snobbish. I think that we believe that our opinion is right and that the public really doesn't know anything and that they're watching a type of movie fare that is beneath us. And I think that that is really the wrong attitude to take. But I think that there, many critics are like, how dare them want us to nominate that common film? That being a thespian can't include films like superheroes and comedies and horror films and things of that nature. So that's number one. Number two, to your question specifically, is that I've read that a number of the stars are mixed on this, is that they're like, yes, I take the award, but no, well, maybe they are putting us in a box. So there is a, you know, kind of yin and yang on that one, like yes and no. I think the biggest problem is the criteria hasn't been spelled out. So how do films get nominated, I mean, in the category, and then how do you determine which one wins? Is it just on, like the Billboard Awards, just on the amount of sales? So I think that that's the mistake that they made. I wouldn't have announced this without telling people what that criteria would be.
Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Brendan is on the line in Madison. Brendan, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Well, not bad. I just wanted to push back a little bit on the point about making this a racial issue. While I do think that they're trying to distinguish Best Picture. They're trying to say that there's a category for the film that people like the most, but then what is the best picture from that, and then what is the best art movie of the year, which is the best picture category. People online have been trying to say, oh, they're just trying to push Black Panther into a category. I don't think that's what they're trying to do. I just think they're trying to distinguish between the best picture that people liked as a whole and paid to go see it, and the best picture that people liked as a whole because of an art form.
Brendan, thanks for the call. Reggie?
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think that there's no reason for this category other than the fact that Black Panther was, as you know, made over $700 million here in the States, is one of the most popular films in recent times, one of only three movies that has made it to the $700 million mark. It, from a people of color perspective, it did so much, and the discussions are so wide-ranging that this was going to be a problem for the Academy if Black Panther did not receive an award. And I just cannot see them being in the room saying, hey, not having that as one of those considerations. It might not have been the only consideration, but I don't buy it that it wasn't part of their consideration set.
Thanks for that call, Brendan. Let's go next to Marcy in Stevens Point. Hi, Marcy.
Hi there. I just have to comment as an avid moviegoer. I'm the kind of person who used to go to movies a couple times a week, but now up late, I mean, they're just there's nothing for me to see that is beyond car chases, cartoons, and computer animated. I'm looking for a story. I think part of this began getting me was I love it. I always enjoyed it, but now with the movies being what they are, I pretty much just watch the fashion and the hairstyles. And in terms of adding another category, you have so many categories. I think this, I can't remember the year, but it's got to be 8-9 years ago. They expanded from about 5-6 movies to 10, and it got to be ridiculous, nonsensical. You're trying to slice up, either the movie's a great movie or it's not a great movie. You don't need to have 10 categories. And I'm looking for movies with a story, not just a one-note wonder, and all you're doing is watching special effects for the whole movie. It really makes me nuts. And it, just as an example, I haven't been to a movie in weeks, and for me this is really, really pathetic because, as I said, I used to go to movies twice a week, and I loved the theater experience, but not my kind of movies, just the cartoonish comic book stuff.
All right, we'll leave it there, Marcy. I want to make sure that Reggie can respond. So, Reggie, Marcy is not finding the kind of movies that she wants to watch, and it sounds like the type that she prefers are the ones that more often than not would be nominated for Best Picture, not Most Popular Film.
Yeah, I really see her point, but I do think that there are some films out there to watch. I think Hollywood, in terms of counter-programming, has been doing a decent job in counter-programming, trying to make sure that there is some balance between all these bang-em-up superhero movies. And there's some good ones out there, but they probably are harder to find, being the fact that when you look at a movie like The Avengers Infinity War, it was in so many theaters, I'm sure it kicked out any other film. It was in almost 4,500 theaters nationwide, which is, I think, was a record. So just a lot. So I totally feel her point, and I really hope that she'll be able to find some movies that she'll like out there in the marketplace. They are out there, but they probably are harder to find.
Thanks for that call. We heard from Brian in West Salem, who wants to know, what's the target audience for the Academy? Is it the general public, or is it the actors, actresses, and others in the audience? And I think about that, you know, at the annual plumbers convention, you know, they don't care what the general public thinks. They want, you know, mm-hmm. who the people within the profession want to award. How does that play at the Academy?
It's interesting because the reason the initial awards were made was to actually help the reputation of the film industry. So I think that the awards are there for all of those reasons. One is to make sure that the people who are acting and the filmmakers and all that, it is insular. So they do things in that way, because you even see some films that really celebrate Hollywood and Hollywood filmmaking that you might say, I don't understand why those films won. At the same time, you need the public, and that's what the telecast is all about, is to really say to the public, hey, come and watch this. Otherwise, ABC will have to take it off of air if people aren't watching it. So it really serves multiple purposes: to speak to the public, speak to the actors, but also speak to the film industry in general.
Reggie, we talked about some other changes that have been made, like you said, increasing the best film category from 5 to 10 movies. Now this new category, most popular film. It seems like the Academy is trying to stay current and relevant, but are they fighting a losing battle?
They might. I don't know if you guys notice is that with all the different outlets for watching movies, you see Amazon and Netflix and spending money and actually not putting them in the theaters. So the Academy does have to try to stay current and say, okay, would those be movies that we'll consider, even though the Academy's rule is that it has to be in a theatrical theater for at least, I think, 2-week run. So they're trying to be current. It could be a losing battle, but we'll see. I don't see the awards going away because they're so prestigious. This is their 90th year. So, but they are fighting an uphill battle, I'll say, because when you look at the actual viewership, it has been trending down for some time.
All right, Reggie, we got just a minute or so left. I give you 1 minute to be totally in charge of the Academy. You get to make one change to the Oscars. What is it?
If I were in charge of the Oscars, I think I wouldn't do a new category. I would continue to do what I'm doing, expand diversity, expand the palette of the voters, and I would also make sure that those technical categories are still televised. I think that is a travesty that if I win one of those technical categories, now it will not be televised, so I cannot get on the podium and say, thank you, Judith, thank you, Rob, for helping me win this award. So that's me, Reggie Ponder, the Real Critic.
Reggie, thank you for helping us do the show today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'll see you guys later. Have a great day.
You too. That's Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago. He critiques movies for a variety of media outlets. Join us for a look at this proposed popular film category for the Oscars. Now, Wisconsin's unemployment rate is at just 2.9%. While that's mostly seen as good news, it is presenting a challenge for manufacturers, especially in rural parts of the state.
They were already having trouble finding workers to fill open positions. Now, with unemployment near a record low and companies competing for potential labor, that hiring task is even harder.
So businesses are getting creative to attract workers. Besides trying to offer higher wages and better benefits, they're providing transportation, improving on-site food services, and more.
Ellen Rosen is a freelance reporter who covers entrepreneurship, manufacturing, and legal trends. She recently wrote about rural manufacturers' hiring challenges for the New York Times. Ellen, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Help us understand how big a problem this is. Can you quantify it for us?
The problem is happening throughout the nation right now. There are no exact numbers on it, but what I know from talking to people all over the country is that there is a shortage in rural areas, in metropolitan areas, and it's at every level, from the unskilled workers to the most advanced workers. The total number of manufacturing jobs as an absolute number has declined since before the recession. There is still a shortage because manufacturers are still expanding.
And so why is there a shortage specifically for workers for these rural manufacturers?
Part of it is a declining population, which is a big part of it. The opioid crisis factors in a bit because that contributes to the shortage of workers. There is some sense that some of the younger workers might want to go to other locations rather than stay in rural areas. But the biggest issue of all is that both parents and children and even teachers had been historically discouraging kids from going into manufacturing. There was this perception that manufacturing was dirty, dark, and dangerous, and that kids shouldn't go into it, so they were saying, don't go this way. So those are all, the problems. There also has been a discouragement of students going into manufacturing and even people who are out of school because of the fear that their jobs were going to be, terminated because of either automation or robots or offshoring of jobs. So it's complicated. That's a long way of saying it's a very complicated problem.
So you report that this is happening around the country, as you said. Which states in particular are having the biggest problems attracting workers to these specifically rural manufacturing sites?
You know, I'm not sure that there's any one state where it's worse than other places. I mean, Wisconsin is particularly hard hit because the economy is good. There's a lot of manufacturing. There's something like fewer than 90,000 people in the entire state are unemployed right now. You've got Foxconn that may be moving in and wants to hire supposedly 13,000 workers on top of everybody else who are all looking. So there's a really robust manufacturing sector and just not enough people.
So I want to go back to something that you said, because you said there is this perception that the jobs are dirty and dangerous and not something to aspire to. But you were also saying that a lot of the jobs are actually, because there's been so much move towards technology, a lot of these jobs, it seems like, would be well suited for someone who comes out of college with, say, an engineering degree. So is it a matter of, is at least part of it a matter of perception and matching people up with the jobs that would actually be a good fit?
There's a big part that's perception. So I was just at a recent conference, and it really was a trade show, and the person was talking about the future of manufacturing, and they said, how many people here are engineers? How many people are in IT, in information technology? And almost everybody raised their hand. There were no classic, what you'd think of, you know, sort of like from the 50s or like Lucy, or just this, the sense of what manufacturing is about. But even at the lower levels, at the less skilled levels, everything is computer-driven. So even if you're coming in as at an entry-level position, you're going to have an iPhone or an iPad, something that is going to be working with the machinery itself. The old days of the assembly lines, those things, you know, where you're doing things by rote, those things are pretty much gone in any sizable manufacturer, where those things have been, you know, taken over by automation.
Are the challenges in urban areas where manufacturers are also looking for employees, are they similar to what's going on in rural areas, or are they distinctly, you know, specialized?
Some of the challenges are the same, and that's finding the talent pool. It's a little bit different because you've got issues in rural areas with housing shortages that are also, as people sort of stay in their homes later and age in place, this is causing problems for younger families that want to come in and set up shop somewhere. Maybe they're returning to the roots, or maybe they're going where the jobs are, and they can't find suitable housing. So that's a problem that's affecting rural areas more than urban areas. But the flip side of that is housing costs in urban areas typically are more expensive. So I spoke to one man, came out of high school, no college education at all, no technical schooling afterwards. He had, you know, fast food jobs, was a gas station attendant, saw there was a job in more of a rural area. This is Minnesota, but not so far away. And he found that the housing was half of the cost of what it was in the Twin Cities. So for him, it was worth the trade of leaving his extended family behind, but moving with his young family because housing was so much better, and there was a good job with good benefits. I mean, the manufacturing jobs pay well. So I think the average in Wisconsin is starting salaries can be, you know, over $50,000 a year, and that's on average, of course. But it should be attractive to people coming out of school. Coming out of high school or coming out of community college or four-year degree.
We're talking with Ellen Rosen right now. She recently wrote a piece for the New York Times about the challenges that rural manufacturers are having for trying to fill open positions. And you did just touch on this, but cost of living has to be something that rural manufacturers could use as a benefit to say, hey, look, you know, you're going to get a decent salary if you come to this small town where we're located, and you're going to get a lot more bang for your buck.
That's one of the huge selling points, and that and community, you know, that maybe they have family, you know, roots, but there's sort of a smaller community where you get to know your neighbors. You know, everybody's sort of looking out for each other. Those things that seem to people who, like myself, who live in a metropolitan area, seem like maybe it's stereotypical, but I've been hearing this again and again, that in small town, you really, even if you're not a native, you can put down roots. So it's interesting to hear that and to see what people are doing. There's also a big emphasis, another thing which I didn't touch on in the article but is also growing, is an emphasis on the arts in some more rural areas, because that seems to be a way of bringing multi-generations together and creates a cohesiveness.
And what other kinds of perks or benefits are employers using to try to lure these workers to come to their locations?
They're doing a lot of, you know, salary, as you mentioned, is, of course, number one. Health benefits, on-site daycare is a big thing, especially if people need to travel from a greater distance to get to their job. The gym memberships. You know, even things like taking a page out of Silicon Valley with some of the transportation, pool tables, you know, things like that that are really seem, you know, innocuous but really matter because, it again, it creates this cohesiveness, better lunchrooms, you know, more gone are the cafeteria styles where everyone's upgrading. And it's amazing because I have been talking to so many manufacturers. They're all concerned about it. They're all talking about it. They say they spend, you know, hours each week on how do we recruit. Another big emphasis is on training and whether or not they are sending their new employees as well as their existing employees to get trained, whether it's on-site or off-site, another huge thing.
Well, and you talked with Tom Wheeler, the president and chief executive of Wigwam Mills, which is based in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and we're going to talk with him actually in a few minutes. He told you that the most important thing for employers is to offer a path for career growth. Is that something that you heard from other business leaders too?
Uniformly, people were saying you can't just expect that someone's going to come in, especially if they're younger, to come in and think that it's a static job. Everybody's looking ahead and planning and saying, what am I going to do? And the employers are listening, and they really are thinking, well, you know, how do they grow? What do we do to encourage that so that they'll stay? Because it's not just recruiting, it's how do we retain? And it's a constant issue. They're just getting very, very creative about it. But recruiting and the retention and the training also has to do with partnering then with local schools, and it's the high schools, it's the middle schools, and of course the community colleges and the technical schools.
We're talking about the challenges rural manufacturers are experiencing in filling both skilled and unskilled positions. Ellen Rosen recently wrote about this for the New York Times.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're on the employee side of the equation, do you work in a factory in a rural area or a small town? What got you working there? If you've thought about this and it's not on your radar, why not? What would it take to get you to take a job in a smaller town factory? What are the obstacles you'd have to overcome? What kind of perks would a company have to offer you? If you're on the other side of the equation, an employer, are you having trouble filling positions in a rural part of the state? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org.
We'll continue the conversation in just a moment here on Central Time.
It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our discussion on the trouble rural manufacturers are facing in filling both skilled and unskilled positions.
You can join in with your questions and your experiences as an employee or an employer at 800-642-1234.
And before we get to your calls, we're joined now by Tom Wheeler. He's the president and chief executive at the Sheboygan-based Wigwam Mills, which makes socks. He was featured in Ellen Rosen's New York Times story about rural manufacturers. Tom, thanks for joining us.
You are welcome. Good afternoon.
So, Tom, how big a worker shortage exists at Wigwam, and how has it affected your business?
Well, it's a growing one. As our business expands into a full third shift, we are in the process of almost doubling our production. And in doing so, have a major requirement for both highly skilled and skilled labor.
And so what have you been doing to try to attract workers to fill those positions?
Well, a number of things, some of which you've spoken to and about with Ellen Rosen. First and foremost, and I always kind of lead with these kind of discussions in what we can do and what we need to do initially. And certainly on the forefront is to create an environment that we have a factory operation and an entire office operation that is clean and safe. My history suggests that environments that you create in the workplace that are ones that people find a pleasant environment to work into every day is really as equally important as comp and benefits. Certainly, all folks, no matter what you do in a company like Wigwam, there's a sense of pride and joy to be associated with a company that has high ethical standards and a good, solid base of operation. People like to feel that they are associated with a winner and one that has extreme high standards. You mentioned earlier when I was listening that another aspect is that we have to create at all levels that folks see a definitive career path, that we are internally active in terms of training and advancement. We're supportive of outside education. You know, we do run a very nice referral program internally for our employees that if they find additional associates or associates that join our company, that we do reward our employees with a cash bonus in terms of helping us recruit and retain employees. And then in a very tough market in Sheboygan, we work with and we partner with some very wonderful companies in Sheboygan County and Bemis and Sargento and Kohler, Plymouth Foam out in Plymouth, Wisconsin. We have to work hard to recruit employees just like all of these other wonderful companies, and we're looking at advancing several new programs in order to do so.
Well, Tom, when we were talking with Ellen earlier, one of the things that came up was there's this perception of what working in a factory is like, that it's dirty and dangerous and really kind of backbreaking labor. What image would you like people to have when they're thinking about possibly working for a manufacturer?
Well, we create a very pleasant environment. By no means is it dirty. We ask people to work hard, but it's not backbreaking kind of work. There's music. We have temperature control. We make sure that people stretch in the morning before they start their shift. We have wellness aspects to the business in terms of nurse care, et cetera, if people require it. We're very conscientious in terms of sort of those things that are repetitive motion type of ailments. And so I think you have to have a very strong, attentive focus on the manufacturing operation and anticipate problems before they happen. And then it's word of mouth. People that come to work for us, people that have put in applications today, for instance, they know we're a good, solid company. They're secure in their employment, and we create an environment that is pleasant and an environment that people can look forward to every day they show up to work.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for giving us a view from on the ground in Wisconsin.
My pleasure, Judah. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. Tom Wheeler is the president and chief executive at Wigwam Mills, which makes socks in Sheboygan. Ellen Rosen stays with us. She wrote a piece about the challenges rural manufacturers are facing. She wrote that for the New York Times. And Ellen, let's go to the phones. And Alex in Green Bay is up first. Hi, Alex.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What would you like to tell us about?
Well, I'm 22, going to college, but I did work in a mill over the summer with a pretty big employer here in Green Bay. And, it wasn't dirty. It was a clean environment. They just did a major expansion, so there was windows and whatnot. But when I came back for winter break to work, there was another manufacturer that I closed down, I think it was in Appleton. And I saw guys that, you know, had worked there for 18, 20 years, 4 weeks vacations and all that. And it was gone, and they're starting back at the bottom. And so, to me, that's kind of a signal like I should probably do something else, because if that job goes away in the future or something like that, you're done. You're mm-hmm. starting over again. So that was just my comment.
Great. Thanks for that, Alex. And Ellen, is that is a sentiment that Alex shared, something that you heard from people?
I've heard it a bit, and I think part of that is getting corrected because there's a better, there's more communication now in terms of what's available. So I'm not sure, I'm surprised in Green Bay that they would just be out of work without being snapped up by somebody else, given what I've heard about the shortages. So I don't know if that's just, someone needs to be connecting the people who are out of work with the employers, and I know that there is greater effort to do that. Otherwise, I'm not sure, but there is, of course, there's that concern, and there's always the sort of residual concern, will there be offshoring? Yeah. But what I've heard is that not only are people trying not to offshore quite as much, except in cases where the expertise is only abroad, but that there's also more foreign direct investment, so companies from abroad are investing and opening in the United States. You know, all of this is pre-tariffs, or a little bit of uncertainty, or a lot of uncertainty, really, because of the tariffs and what that may mean for factories and manufacturing and even sort of for consumers down the road. But you do get the sense that the employers are trying. So I'm surprised. Did you talk to any of them about why they hadn't found new work?
Actually, we're not going to be able to go back to Alex, but I want to try to get one more quick call in. Chris in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hi. Thanks a lot for the program today. It's been great. I wish I could have caught all of it. But my question/comment I'd like to hear you all maybe grapple with a bit is the decline of labor unions and union representation of workers in factories. I know this administration in Wisconsin has taken us to a right to work state. And, you know, historically, unions were born out of factories, and factory workers found, you know, solidarity with each other. They had this group and camaraderie together through their union. So when you take that away, you're taking away something in the workplace culture that you can't get back just by having a clean factory and listening to music. You know, workers have lost their voice and agency in their workplace, and that's something that I think would do a lot to retain your workforce.
And we're going to have to leave it there, Chris. I want to make sure that Ellen has a chance to respond. What about that? What about the decline of unions? Has that contributed to this?
I have not heard that. It's very possible that it has. I mean, places like Wigwam are, you know, do everything. So sometimes there are companies that are meeting union requirements, even if there aren't unions. But I don't. That just hasn't not come up in my reporting about what the impact of a lack of union.
And Ellen, just very briefly, do you think that rural manufacturers who are short on workers have reason to be optimistic about the future, or is this just going to get worse?
I think it's going to continue to decline. The problem will continue for a while. If they cannot bring in immigrants, which is another big issue, and of course another hotly contested issue, but without an immigrant workforce, this is going to continue for a while. A third of companies surveyed by the National Institute of Manufacturing, which is a research arm, found in 2015, so 3 years ago, before the shortages were as widespread, found they were already turning down work because they didn't have enough manpower.
Well, Ellen, thanks so much for joining us today. It was a great conversation.
Thank you.
Ellen Rosen is a freelance reporter who covers entrepreneurship, manufacturing, and legal trends. We talked with her about rural manufacturers' difficulties in hiring workers.